Kiss Me Deadly by Nikki Spillane. All I saw was the dame there in the glare of the headlights, waving her arms like a huge puppet. And the curse I spit out filled the car and my own ears. I wrenched the wheel over, felt the rear end start to slide, brought it out with a splash of power, and almost ran up the side of the cliff as the car fishtailed. The brakes bit in, gouging a furrow in the shoulder, then jumped at the pavement and held. Somehow I had managed a sweeping curve around the babe. I sat there and let myself shake. The stink of burned rubber and brake lining hung in the air like smoke, and I was thinking of every damn thing I ever wanted to say to a harebrained woman so I could have it ready when I got my hands on her. That was as far as I got. She was there in the car beside me. The door slammed shut, and she said, "Thanks, mister." I fumbled out a cigarette, but she reached it before I did. For the first time, I noticed her hands were shaking as hard as mine. I lit hers, got one out for me, and lit that one, too. "How stupid can you get?" I said. "Pretty stupid." She bit the words off. Behind me, the lights of another car were reaching around a curve. They swept through the rear window, then swept on past. And the second that I had a good look at her, she was rigid, her face frozen. When only the red dot of the taillight showed in front of us, she let out her breath and leaned back against the seat. In a way, she was good-looking, but her face was more interesting than pretty. Wide-set eyes, large mouth, tawny hair that spilled onto her shoulders like melted butter. The rest of her was wrapped into a tailored trench coat that was belted around her waist, and I remembered her standing there in the road like something conjured up too quickly in a dream. A Viking. A damn fool crazy Viking dame with holes in her head. I kicked a stalled engine over, crawled through the gears, and held on tight to the wheel until my brain started working right. "How'd you get up here?" I said. "What does it look like?" "Like you got dumped." I looked at her quickly and saw her tongue snake out over her lips. "You picked the wrong guy to go out with." She plucked a cigarette from her lips and blew a stream of smoke at the windshield. "Look, I'm grateful for the ride. I'm sorry I scared hell out of you. But if you don't mind, just shut up and take me somewhere or let me out." My mouth pulled back in a grin. A dame with nerve like that could make a mess of a guy before he gave her the boot. "Okay, girl," I said. "Now it's my turn to be sorry. It's a hell of a place for anybody to be stranded, and I guess I would have done the same thing. Almost. Where did you want to go?"
"Where are you going?"
"New York."
"All right. I'll go there."
There was a maze of neon up ahead, and I slowed to 50, then to 35, and held it. The sign along the road said, "Hannafield, population 3,600, speed limit 25. A quarter mile up the highway, a flashing red light winked in our direction, and I got on the brakes. There was a police car in the middle of the road, and two uniformed cops stood alongside it, checking the cars as they came by. Trouble, like the smoke over a cake of dry ice. You can't smell it, but you can see it, and watch it boil and seep around things, and know that soon something's going to crack and shatter under the force of the horrible contraction. I looked at the dame, and she was stiffly immobile. Her lips held so tight her teeth showed. A scream held in her throat, ready to let go. I leaned out of the car before I reached the cop. "Trouble, officer?" His hat was pushed back on his head, and a cigarette drooped from his mouth. The gun he wore hung cowboy style, and for effect, he draped his hand on the butt. "Where'd you come from, bud?" "A real cop, this guy. I wondered how much he'd paid for his appointment." Coming down from Albany, officer. What's up?" "See anybody along the road? Anybody hitchhiking?" I felt her hand close over mine before I answered him. It closed and squeezed with a sudden warmth and urgency, and then she slid it under the trench coat, and I felt the bare flesh of her thigh there. In one fluid motion, she moved her grip up my forearm and pulled my hand against her body where there was no doubting her meaning. I said, "Not a thing, officer. My wife or me have been awake all the way, and if anybody was there, we sure would have known about it. Maybe they came on ahead." "Nobody came ahead, bud." "Who were you looking for?" "A dame. She escaped from some sanitarium upstate and hitched a ride down to a diner in a truck. When they started broadcasting a description, she beat it outside and disappeared.
Oh. Well, okay for me to go?
Yeah, go on. Beat it. He walked back to the patrol car, and I let out the clutch. I took my hand away slowly, keeping my eyes on the road. The town went by in a hurry, and on the other side, I stepped on it again. Her foot nudged mine off the gas pedal, and the car lost headway.
Look, she said.
She had the coat wide open and was smiling at me. The coat, that's all. All the rest was sleekly naked. A Viking in satin skin. An invitation to explore the curves and valleys that lay nestled in the shadows and moved with her breathing. She squirmed in the seat and her legs made a beautifully obscene gesture, and she smiled again. She was familiar then. Not so much the person, but the smile. It was a forced, professional smile that looks warm as fire and really isn't anything at all. I reached over and flipped the coat closed. "You'll get cold," I said. I pulled the car up the road into the dull glare of the service station sign and coasted up to the pumps. A guy came out of the building wiping his eyes, and I told him to fill it up. I had to get out to unlock the gas cap, and I heard the car door open and slam shut. The blonde went up to the building, walked inside, and didn't come back until I was counting the money into the guy's hand. When she got back in the car, there was something there that hadn't been there before. Her face had softened, and the frost had thawed until she seemed almost relaxed. Another car came by as we rolled off the gravel to the road, and she didn't pay any attention to it at all. The coat was belted again. The flicker of a smile she gave me was real. And she put her head back against the seat and closed her eyes. I didn't get it at all. All I knew was that when I hit the city, I was going to pull up to the first subway station I saw, open the door, say goodbye, then check on the papers until I found where somebody had put her back on the shelf again. I thought that. I wished I could mean it. All I felt was the trouble, like the smoke over dry ice, and it was seeping all over me. The moon that had been hidden behind the clouds came out long enough to bathe the earth in a quick shower of pale yellow light that threw startlingly long shadows across the road, and among those dark fingers was one that seemed darker still and moved with a roar of sound that evolved into a dark sedan cutting in front of us. Metal tore into metal with a nasty tearing sound. A splintering glass made little incongruous musical highlights above it all. I kicked the door open and came out of the car in time to see the men piling out of the sedan. The gun in the guy's hand spit out a tongue of flame that lanced into the night, and the bullet's banshee scream matched the one that was going on behind me. He never got another shot, because my fist split his face open. I went into the one behind him, and there was a hiss of something whipping through the air, and whatever it was caught me across the forehead. And for a second, before all time and distance went, I thought I was going to be sick, and the hate for those bastards oozed out of my skin like sweat. There was muffled screaming, choked-off sobs, the cadence of harsh, angry voices biting out words that were indistinguishable at first. The motor of a car chewed into the sounds, and there was more jangling of metal against metal. Then arms had me around the waist, and my feet and hands scraped cold concrete. Somewhere during those seconds, the screaming had been chopped off and the voices had ceased. Then it was later, and they had left me on the floor. There were my feet and my hands, immobile lumps jutting in front of my body. Something moved, and a pair of shoes shuffled into sight, so I knew I wasn't alone. The floor in front of my feet stretched out into other shoes and the lower halves of legs. Four separate pairs of feet all pointing toward the same direction. And when my eyes followed them, I saw her in the chair and saw what they were doing to her. She had no coat on, and her skin had an unholy whiteness about it, splotched with deeper colors. Her mouth was making uncontrollable mewing sounds. A hand with pliers did something to her, and the mouth opened without screaming. A voice said, "Enough. That's enough." "She can still talk?" another one answered. "No, she's past it. I've seen it happen before. We were silly to go this far, but we had no choice. She'll have to go now. Everything ready?" "Yeah, the guy too." "Naturally. Take him out to the road. You two, help carry them out. We spent enough time on this operation." All I could do was hear them, hear everything they said, and keep the sound of their voices spilling over in my ears so that when I heard them again, I wouldn't need to look at their faces to know I was killing the right ones. The bastards. The dirty, lousy bastards. Hands went under my knees and shoulders, and for a second I thought I would see what I wanted to see. But the hate inside me sent the blood beating to my head, bringing back the pain. And it was like a black curtain being pulled closed across my mind. It was like a sleep that you awaken from because you had been sleeping cramped up. It was a forced awakening that hurts, and you hear yourself groan as you try to straighten out. And suddenly, there's an immediate sharpness to the awakening as you realize it hadn't been a bad dream after all, but something alive and terrifying instead. She was there beside me in the car, her head lolled against the window, her eyes staring sightlessly at the ceiling. She jerked and fell against me, but not because she was alive. The car was moving ahead as something rammed into the rear of it. Somehow I got myself up, looked over the wheel into the splash of light ahead of me, and saw the cliff short feet away. And even as I reached for the door, the wheels went over the edge through the ready-made gap in the retaining wall, and the nose dipped down into an incredible void. Mike? I turned my head toward the sound. The motion brought a wave of silent thunder with it, like the surf crashing on the beach. I heard my name again. Mike? My eyes opened. The light hurt, but I kept them open. For a minute, she was just a dark blur. Then fuzzy edges went away, and the blue became beautiful. Hello, kitten, I said. Velda's mouth parted in a slow smile that had all the happiness in the world wrapped in it. Glad to see you back, Mike. It's good to be back. I'm surprised I got here. So were a lot of people. Pat's outside. Should I ask him to come in? She got up and went to the door, and then there he was, grinning at me foolishly, shaking his head while he looked me over. Like my outfit, I said? Great. On you, white looks good. 3 days ago, I was figuring I'd have to finance a new tux to bury the corpse in. I smiled. Nice guy, Pat. A swell cop. But he was getting one hell of a sense of humor. Then his words sank in. 3 days? He nodded and draped himself in the big chair beside the bed. You got it Monday. This is Thursday. He glanced at Velda. A quick look that had something behind it I didn't get. She bit her lip, her teeth glinting against the magenta ripeness of her mouth, then nodded in assent. Pat said, Can you remember what happened, Mike? I knew the tone. He tried to cover it, but he didn't make it. It was a soft, troubled tone, falsely light yet direct and insistent. He knew I'd caught it, and his eyes dropped. I remember, I said. I had an accident, that's all. What's the pitch? You're not to be questioned, yet. Who wants to question me? Among other law enforcement agencies, some government men. That accident of yours occurred in New York State, but right now you happen to be just over the state line in a Jersey hospital. The New York State troopers will be looking forward to seeing you, plus some county cops from upstate a ways. Suppose you explain, I said. You were lucky to get out of the car alive. The door sprung when it hit the side of the drop and you were thrown clear. They found you wrapped around some bushes. If the car hadn't sprayed the place with burning gas, you might still be there. There was a dame in the car, I said. I'm coming to that. His eyes searched my face. She was dead. She's been identified. As an escapee from a sanitarium. It didn't catch him a bit off base. Those county cops were pretty sore when they found out. Why'd you pass them up? I didn't like their attitude. He nodded as if that explained it. Hell, it did. Then his lips got tight all of a sudden and his fingernails disappeared into balled-up fists. Damn it, Mike. What are you into? Do you realize what kind of mess you've been fooling around with? No. I'm waiting for you to tell me. That woman was under surveillance by the feds. She was part of something big that I don't know about myself. And she was committed to the institution to recover so she could do some tall talking to a closed session of Congress. There was a police guard outside her door and on the grounds. Right now, the Washington boys are hopping, and it looks like the finger is pointed at you. As far as they're concerned, you got her out of there, and you knocked her off.
What do you think, Pat? I'm waiting to hear you say it.
It was an accident, I said. I picked her up on the way down from Albany. I don't know a thing about her, but she seemed like a nervy kid in a jam, and I didn't like the snotty way the cop acted when he stopped the car. So I went on through. We got down maybe 10 miles when the sedan pulled out from the side of the road and nudged me to a stop. Now, here's the part you won't believe. I got out sore as hell, and somebody took a shot at me. It missed, but I got sapped, and sapped so beautifully that I never came completely out of it. I don't know where the hell they took us, but wherever it was, they tried to force something out of the dame. She never came across. Those lads were anxious to get rid of her, and me too. So they piled us in the car and gave it a shove over the cliff. Who were they? Pat asked. Damned if I know. 5 or 6 guys. Can you identify them? Not by their faces. Maybe if I heard them speak. I didn't mean maybe at all. I could still hear every syllable they spoke, and those voices would talk in my mind until I died. Or they did. Pat hesitated, glanced at Velda, then back at me again. You're going to stick with that story? What else? Okay. I'll check on it. I hope you aren't making any mistakes. Good night now. Take it easy. I'll do my own checking when I'm up, Pat. See you around. He shot me a wry grin and left. I picked up Velda's hand. She was a big, luscious woman smiling at me with a mouth that was only inches away and coming closer each second. Velda. Tall, with hair like midnight. Beautiful. So it hurt to look at her. Her hands were soft on my face and her mouth a hot, hungry thing that tried to drink me down. Even through the covers, I could feel the firm pressure of her breasts, live things that caressed me out of their own accord. She took her mouth away reluctantly so I could kiss her neck and run my lips across her shoulders. I love you, Mike, she said. I love everything about you, even when you're all fouled up with trouble. She traced a path down my cheek with her finger. Now, what do you want me to do? Get your nose to the ground, kitten, I told her. Find out what the hell this is all about. Take a check on that sanitarium and get a line into Washington if you can. That won't be easy. They can't keep secrets in the Capitol, baby. There'll be rumors. I patted her hand and she straightened up from the bed. I watched her walk toward the door, taking in every feline motion of her body. There was something lithe and animal-like in the way she swung her hips, a jungle tautness to her shoulders. Cleopatra might have had it. Josephine might have had it. But they never had it like she had it. It was Monday again, a rainy, dreary Monday that was a huge wet muffler draped over the land. When I got down to the hospital lobby, they were standing there politely, hats in their hands. Young guys with old eyes. Sharp, junior executive types. Maybe you could pick them out of a crowd, but most likely you couldn't. They were junior executives, all right, but in J. Edgar Hoover's organization. The tall guy in the blue pinstripe said, "Our car is out front, Mr. Hammer." I fell in beside him with the others and went out to get driven home. We took the Lincoln Tunnel into New York, cut east on 41st, then took 9th Avenue downtown to the modern gray building they used for operational headquarters. They were real nice, those boys. They took my hat and coat, shoved up a chair for me to sit in, asked if I felt well enough to talk, and when I told them sure, suggested that maybe I'd like a lawyer present. I grinned at that one. Nope, just ask questions, and I'll do what I can to answer them. But thanks anyway. The tall one sat at a desk and picked up a file. He flipped it open and glanced through it, but he wasn't reading it. He knew the damn thing by heart. "It says here you're pretty tough, Mr. Hammer." "Some people seem to think so." "Several close brushes with the law." "Notice the result?" "I have. I imagine your license can be waived if we want to press the issue." I dragged out my deck of luckies and flipped one loose. I said I'd cooperate. You can quit trying to bluff me. If there's anything you'd really like to know, I'd be glad to give it to you. His mouth pursed in thought for a minute. "Captain Chambers gave us a complete report on things. The details checked, and your part in it seems to fit your nature. Please understand something, Mr. Hammer. We're not after you. If your part was innocent enough, that's as far as we need to go." It's just that we can't afford to pass up any angles. Good, then I'm clear. As far as we're concerned, I suppose there's a warrant out for me upstate. We'll take care of it. Thanks. There's just one thing. He paused. From your record, you seem to be a pretty astute sort of person. What's your opinion on this thing? Since when do you guys deal in guesswork? When that's all we have to go on. I dropped the cigarette in the ashtray on the desk and looked at him. The dame knew something she shouldn't have. She wouldn't talk, so they bumped her. I imagine it was supposed to look like an accident. Now, do you mind if I ask one? No, go right ahead. Who was she? Berga Torn. My eyes told him to finish it, and he shrugged his shoulder. She was a taxi dancer, nightclub entertainer, friend of boys on the loose, and anything else you could mention where sex was concerned. A frown pulled my forehead. I don't get it. You're not supposed to, Mr. Hammer. A freeze clouded up his eyes. It told me about as much as he was about to say, and I was all through. I could go now, and thanks. Thanks a lot. I got up and pulled my hat on. One of the boys held the door open for me. I turned around and grinned at him. I will, fella, I said. What? He asked. Get it. My grin got bigger. Then somebody else is going to get it. I took the elevator downstairs, called a cab, and gave him Pat's office address. The cop on the desk told me to go ahead, and when I walked in, Pat was sitting there waiting for me, trying on a friendly smile for size. He said, "How'd it go, Mike?" It was a rotten pitch. I hooked a chair over with my foot and sat down. I don't know what the act was for, but they sure wasted time. But I know the kid's name, Berga Torn. "That all?" he asked. "Part of her history. What's the rest?" Pat dropped his eyes and stared at his hands. Then he looked up at me, his face a study in caution. "Mike, I'm going to give you some information. The reason I'm doing it is because you're likely to fish around and find it yourself if I don't, and interference is one thing we can't have." "Go ahead." "You've heard of Carl Ivello?" I nodded, and Pat went on. "Ivello is the boy behind the powers. The last senatorial investigations turned up a lot of big names in the criminal world, but they never turned up his. That's how big he is." I felt my eyebrows go up. "Where does it come from?" "Nobody seems to know. A lot is suspected, but until there's plenty of concrete evidence, no charges are going to be passed around. They want him bad. And when they get him, all the other big boys are going to fall." "So what?" I said. "Berga Torn was his mistress for a while." It started to make sense now. "So she had something on the guy?" Pat shrugged disgustedly. "Who knows? She was supposed to have had something. She can't talk. When they were giving her the business, as you said, they were trying to get it out of her."
"You figure they were Carl's men, then?"
"Evidently."
"What about the sanitarium she was in?"
"She was there under the advice of her doctor," Pat said. "She was going to testify to the committee, and under the strain, she almost had a nervous breakdown. All the committee hearings were tied up until she was released."
"That's a pretty picture," I said. "Where do I come in?" Little lines seemed to grow around his eyes.
"You don't. You stay out of it."
"Nuts. There are a bunch of guys who drove a sedan I want to see again. I don't know what they look like, but I'll know them when I see them. If the feds beat me to them, it's okay by me. But I'll wait, pal. If I don't reach them first, I'll wait until they get through testifying or serving that short sentence those babies seem to draw. And when I do, you won't be having much trouble from them again, ever. They're a bunch of cold-blooded bastards. You should have seen what they did to that kid before they killed her. They were after something she knew. She was the key to something." Pat's face was grave.
"And you're going after it?"
"What did you expect?" I asked.
"I don't know, Mike." He wiped his hand across his eyes. "I guess I didn't expect you to take it lying down. But since it's going to be that way, you might as well know this much. Those government boys are shrewd apples. They know your record and how you work. They even know how you think. Don't expect any help from this end. If you cross those boys, you're going to wind up in the can."
"You have your orders?" I asked him.
in writing, from pretty high up. His eyes met mine. I was told to pass the news on to you if you acted up. A grimace pulled at my mouth. They want to make a public example out of those big boys. They want to see them sweat it out behind bars. Enough to that. Those lads in the sedan don't give a hoot for authority. They don't give a damn for you, me, or anybody besides themselves. They only respect one thing, a gun in their bellies that's going off and splashing their guts around the room. That kind of attitude they respect. I stuck my hat on my head, keeping it back off the blue lump between my eyes. See you around, Pat, I said. Maybe, maybe not, he said to my back. I went downstairs into the rain and waited there until a cab came along. She came in at 11:30. She used the key I had given her a long time ago and walked into the living room, bringing with her the warmth and love for life that was like turning on the light. I said, "Hello, beautiful." And I didn't have to say anything more because there was more in the words than the sound of my voice, and she knew it. She started to smile slowly, and her mouth made a kiss. Our lips didn't have to touch. She flung that warmth across the room, and I caught it. Velda said, "Ugly face. You're uglier now than you were before, but I love you more than ever." "So I'm ugly. Underneath, I'm beautiful." "Who can you dig down that deep?" she grinned. Then added, "Except me, maybe." "Just you, honey," I said. The smile that played around her mouth softened a moment. Then she slipped out of the coat and threw it across the back of a chair. I could never get tired of looking at her, I thought. She was everything you needed just when you needed it. A bundle of woman whose emotions could be hard or soft or terrifying. But whatever they were, it was what you wanted. To me, she was everything, and the dull light of the room was reflected in the ring I had slipped onto her finger. "This one's too big, Mike." "It is." Her eyes drew a line across the floor and up my body until they were staring hard into mine. "I was busy while you were in the hospital, Mike. This isn't murder like you know it before. It was planned, organized killing, and it's so big that even the city authorities are afraid of it. The thing has ballooned up to the point where it's federal. And even then, it's touching such high places, the feds have to move carefully." "So? What did you pick up?" "A few details. I found a trucker who passed your car where they had it parked with flares fore and aft. The guy stopped, and when he saw nobody around, he went on. The nearest phone was 3 miles down the road in a diner, and he was surprised when nobody had shown up there because he hadn't seen anybody walking. The girl in the diner knew about an abandoned shack a few hundred yards from the spot, and I went there. The place was alive with feds. They held me a while, questioned me, and released me with a warning that had teeth in it." "They find anything?" "From what I could see, nothing. But the shack was a good 50 yards from the highway and covered with brush on state property. Unless you knew where to look, you'd never find it."
"Too convenient to be coincidental, you mean?"
"Much too convenient. It doesn't make sense. The kid was running away. How'd they know which direction she'd pick out?"
"What are you going to do?" she asked.
"Guess. Tell me." "They killed a dame and tried to frame me for it. They wrecked my heap and put me in the hospital. They're figuring us all for suckers and don't give a hang who gets hurt. The slobs, the miserable slobs." I ran my fist against my palm until it stung. "I hate the guts of those people. I hate them so bad it's coming out of my skin. I'm going to find out who they are, and then they've had it. They know it, too."
"It makes you a target," she said.
"Kitten, it sure does, and that I go for. If that's one way of pulling them inside shooting range, I'm plenty glad to be a target." For a long minute, neither one of us spoke. She sat there with her head against the cushion, staring at the ceiling.
"Then, Mike, I have news for you."
The way she said it made me look up. "Give." A muscle in my face twitched. She reached in her jacket pocket and came up with an envelope. She flipped it across the room and I caught it.
"Pat brought it in this morning. He couldn't do a thing about it, so don't get teed off at him."
I pulled the flap out and fingered the sheet loose. It was a very simple order, telling me that I no longer had a license to carry a gun, and temporarily my state-granted right to conduct private investigations was suspended. There was no mention of a full or partial refund of my $200 fee for said license to said state. So I laughed. "They want me to do it the hard way," I said. "They don't want you to do it at all," she answered. "From now on, you're a private citizen and nothing else. And if they catch you with a gun, you get it under the Sullivan law." "This happened once before, remember?" Velda nodded slowly. There was no expression at all on her face. "That's right, but they forgot about me. Then I had a PI ticket and a license for a gun. This time they didn't forget. We're going to have it rough. Not we, girl. Me. We." Only the slight reflection of light from her pupils showed that her eyes were open and looking at me. "Who do you belong to, Mike?"
"You tell me," I said.
She didn't answer. There was something sad in the way her lips tried to curve into a smile. "All right, kid, you know the answer. It's we. And if I stick my neck out, you can be there to help me to get back in time." I picked a .45 up off the floor beside the chair, slid the clip out, and thumbed the shells into my palm. "Your boy Mike is getting on in years, pal. Soft, maybe?"
"Not soft," she said. "Smarter. We're up against something so big, pure muscle won't even dent it. Being smart is the only thing that's going to move it.
At least you have the sense to change your style."
"Yeah," I said. "We'll start with Birga Torn. I want those sanitarium records. I want her life history and the history of anyone she was associated with. That's your job."
"And you?" she said.
"Evello. Carl Evello. Someplace he comes into this thing, and he's my job."
Velda nodded, drumming her fingernails against the arm of her chair.
"He won't be easy," she said.
"Nobody's easy."
"Especially Avello," she said. "He's organized."
She looked at me with a half smile, a beautiful jungle animal sizing up her mate before telling him what was outside the den.
"Mafia," she said.
I could feel it starting way down at my toes. A cold, burning flush that crept up my body and left in its wake a tingling sensation of rage and fear that was pure emotion and nothing else. My fingers went out and began to play with the slugs that squatted in the bottom of the ashtray where I had dropped them. She watched me from across the room, her eyes half closed in speculation. Then she uncurled and reached for her coat. When she left, the room got a little darker. The Mafia. The stinking, slimy Mafia. An oversized mob of ignorant, lunk-headed jerks who ruled with fear and got away with it because they had money to back themselves up. There's a code they work by, an unbreakable code. Once the Mafia touches you, it never takes its hand away. And if you make one move, just one single hesitant move to get out from under, it's all over. Sometimes it takes a day or two, even a year maybe, but it's all over. You get dead. In a sense, though, it was funny. Someplace at the top of the heap was a person. From him, the fear radiated like from the center of a spider web. He sat on his throne and made a motion and somebody died. He made another motion and somebody was twisted until they screamed. A nod of his head and something happened to make a guy leap from a roof because he couldn't take it anymore. Just one person did that. One soft, pulpy person. It was late, but only by the clock. The city was waking up to start living. I whistled down a cab and hopped a ride over to Pat's apartment. He let me in with a grin and muttered something past a folder he had clamped between his teeth, waved me in and took my coat. His eyes made a casual sweep over my chest, and he didn't have to look a second time to tell I wasn't wearing a rig. I sat down and took out a smoke. He relaxed into a wing chair and put down some papers. "Glad to see you're traveling light."
"Didn't you expect me to?"
His mouth crooked up. "I figured you'd know better than not to. Just don't blame me for the deal."
I grinned back at him. "How long am I supposed to be in solitary for?"
"When they're ready to lift it, they'll lift it. And not before."
His hand got tight on his glass. Mike, this isn't just murder.
I know, I said. Mafia. Nothing changed in his face.
So, he said,
I can be useful if you quit booting me around. I took a drag on the smoke and let it curl out into the light. Pat finished off the glass and swirled the last few drops around the bottom.
Mike, what do you want from me?
You say it, Pat.
He laughed this time.
You want me for your third arm. You're going to dive in this thing no matter who says what. And as long as you are, we might as well use you instead of tripping over you.
The grin was real. The light was back in his eyes, and we were a team riding over anything that stood in our way.
I'll tell you something, Mike, he said. I don't like the way the gold badge boys do business either. I don't like political meddling and crime, and I'm sick of the stuff that's been going on for so long.
Okay, I'll lay my job on the line. Tell me what you want, and I'll feed it to you. If something good comes of it, I'll have a talking point, and maybe I can keep my job.
Now let's hear your angle.
Information, I said. Detailed.
He didn't have to go far for it. The stuff was right there in his lap. He pulled it all out of the envelope and thumbed the sheets apart.
Known criminals with mafia connections, he said. Case histories of mafia efficiency and police negligence. 20 pages of murder, theft, dope pushing, and assorted felonies. And all we're working with are the bottom rungs of the ladder.
Is Carl Evello there, I asked. Pat threw the sheets on the floor in disgust.
Evello isn't anywhere.
Berger Torn.
Why did the committee want her, I asked.
There was a rumor that Evello was keeping her for a while. It was during the time he was raking in a pile. The same rumor had he gave her the boot, and the committee figured she'd be mad enough to spill what she knew about him. So the feds approached her. She was scared stiff. But she indicated that there was something she could give out. She wanted time to collect her information, plus protection after she let it out.
Great. I snuffed the butt out and leaned back in the chair. In the meantime, he went on, she got the jitters. Twice she got away from the men assigned to cover her. Before the month was out, she was practically hysterical. She went to a doctor, and he had her committed to a sanitarium. She was supposed to stay there 3 weeks. There were agents assigned to guard the sanitarium. She got away and was killed.
How'd she get out?
He shrugged. Utter simplicity, the kind of thing you can't beat. She picked up a raincoat and shoes from the nurse's quarters and walked out with 2 female attendants. It was raining, and one of them had an umbrella, and they stayed together under it. They went as far as the corner together, and the other 2 got on a bus while she kept walking.
I let out a short grunt.
What attitude are the cops taking?
It's murder, so they're working it from that end.
And getting nowhere, I added.
So far, Pat said. Lay off. How do you plan to work it?
Where's Evello, I asked.
Right here in the city.
And the known mafia connections?
Pat looked thoughtful.
Other big cities. But their operational center is here.
His eyes went hard and nasty as he said, which brings us to the end of our informative little discussion on the mafia. We know who some of them are and how they operate, but that's as far as it goes.
Washington doesn't have anything?
Sure, but what good does it do? Nobody fingers the mafia. There's that small but important little item known as evidence.
We'll get it, I said. One way or another. I pushed myself out of the chair.
First, Berger Torn. I want to find out more about her.
Pat reached down and picked the top sheet off the pile he had dropped on the floor beside him. You might as well start with this. It's as much as anyone has to start with.
I folded it up and stuck it in my pocket.
You'll let me know if anything comes up?
He nodded.
I'll let you know.
I picked up my coat and headed for the door. Downstairs, I made for the subway station. I shoved a dime in the turnstile, went through, pulled the sheet out of my pocket, glanced at it once, and walked over to the downtown platform. Something happens to Brooklyn at night. It isn't a sister borough anymore. She withdraws to herself and pulls the shades down. then begins a life that might seem foreign to an outsider. She's strange, exciting, tinted with bright lights, yet elusive somehow. I got off the Brighton line at DeKalb and went up to the street. A guy on the corner pointed the way to the address I wanted, and I walked a few blocks to it. What I was looking for was an old-fashioned brownstone, a hangover from a half-century past that had the number painted on the door, and looked at the street with dull, blank eyes. I went up the four sandstone steps, held a match to the mailboxes, and found what I wanted. The names Carver and Torn were there, but somebody had drawn a pencil through the two of them and written Bernstein underneath. All I could do was mutter under my breath and punch the button labeled Super. I leaned on it until the door started clicking. Then I opened it and went in. He didn't want to come out, but he did. He made himself as big as he could without helping much.
Yes?
I showed him the badge I still had. It didn't mean a thing anymore, but it shone in the light and wasn't something everybody carried. Get your keys.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
He reached up beside the door, unhooked a ring, and stepped back into the hall. Berger Torn's place, I said. I want to go through it.
But the police have already been through there. Today I rented it already, he protested.
Anybody there now?
Not yet. Tomorrow they're supposed to come.
Then let's go. First he hesitated, then he shrugged and started up the stairs. Two flights up, he fitted a key into a lock and threw the door open. He felt around for the light switch, flipped it, and stood aside for me. I don't know what I expected to find. The place had been gone over by experts, and if anything had been worth taking, it was gone now. I walked into a bedroom and opened the door of a closet. A half dozen dresses and a suit hung there. The floor was lined with shoes. The dresser was full. The clothes were good, fairly new, but not from exclusive shops. Stockings were neatly rolled up and packed into a top drawer. Beside them were four envelopes. A bill from a dress shop marked Past Due, two notes from a pal in L.A., and a letter from the Milburn Steamship Line saying that there were no available berths on the liner Cedric and how sorry they were. It was the other bedroom that gave me the surprise. There was nothing there at all, just a made-up bed, a cleaned-out closet, and dresser drawers lined with newspaper. The super watched me until I backed out into the living room. Whose room? I jerked my thumb at the empty place.
Miss Carver's.
Where is she?
2 days ago, she moved out.
Who paid for this place?
Torn's name is on the lease.
I didn't ask that. He shrugged.
She handed me the dough. I don't know where she got it.
Does she have any men up here to see her?
Mystery, said. There's 12 apartments in this rat trap, and I can't keep track of who comes in and who comes out. If you want to know what I think, then I'd say yes, she was being kept.
You know where I can reach the Carver girl? The look he gave me was quick and worried.
She didn't leave no address.
I made it sound flat and businesslike. You know, when you step in front of the law, there's charges that can be pressed.
Look, mister, if I knew...
He thought about it, then shrugged.
Okay.
She called today. She's expecting some mail from her boyfriend and asked me to send it to her. She don't want anybody to know where she is.
Got a pencil?
I handed him one with the remains of an envelope, and he jotted it down. By the way, what does she look like?
Kind of a pretty blonde, hair like snow.
I'll find her, I said.